I'm cruising down the streets in my Lexus RX 350, which is about the most mom-looking car you can possibly buy. I know I've got this background track playing that makes it kind of seem like summer, maybe there's sunshine and palm trees, but on the day this was recorded, it was absolutely freezing. I'm on my way to Dave Barisi's house right now, who's someone I met at Open Soccer, and also happens to be a DJ, which just goes to show you that football brings the world together. I'm telling you all this because, due to the COVID-19 pandemic, this is the first time, in what seems like forever, that I'm actually able to learn something in person, and I can't think of anything better than DJ. I get to spin the buttons and push the records, I said that wrong. I've always been kind of curious how difficult it actually is, and I'm not someone who's musically gifted in any way, shape, or form. So if I can pull this off, I will be overjoyed. This is Ari Kagan. You're listening to Things You Don't Need to Know. So I arrive at Dave's house, and he takes me downstairs to his recording studio, which is a room with carpeted floors and ceilings that are a little bit lower than normal, very reminiscent of that era of architecture. But by far the most obvious thing about this room are the four shelving units, one on each of the walls, all of them completely packed with vinyl records.
But, eight or 10,000.
But you could always...
Because there's more on the top that we haven't even counted.
And then there is... I have, like, crazy stack here.
Yeah.
We'll take a closer look at the collection a little bit later. Before we do that, let's get to know Dave. So without any further ado, please welcome David Barisi.
My name is David Barisi. Been known as DJ Q for quite some time.
Q coming from Cue Up the Next Song.
Been a DJ since I was 13 years old. Been a radio DJ, nightclub DJ, and I also produce music as well.
Dave was first inspired to be a DJ during the 1994 Woodstock Music Festival, which took place in Saugerties, New York. This might be because I pretty much only see him at Open Soccer, but he's usually wearing a fresh Adidas tracksuit.
My dad owned a restaurant over there, and he opened up the parking lot.
And he let people rent out space, almost like a flea market.
In the middle of all of this was one of my dad's friends. He had speakers set up, he had the lights set up and everything, and I was helping making pizzas on a food truck from my dad. But every now and then, I would come down into the middle of the parking lot, and I would see him play music and whatnot, and had all these amplifiers, mixers, and everything looked so cool, and I was so into, like, the music. I started asking a bunch of questions, and then, you know, he put me on the boards. He's like, you think you could do it kind of thing, you know? And I was doing it here and there, whatever, and then I, like, really wanted to be into it. So then I started seeing things on TV, like MTV, DJ Scribble, Kid Capri, DJ Jazzy Jeff. Watching it on TV was something different, you know? Like, I was like, wow, like, he's the king of the party. Like, everybody is going crazy because of what he's doing. You know, it's not just he's playing music, he's performing. And I was like, wow, I want to be like that. That's what I want to do.
So every single day after school, he was practicing.
I do 5% of my homework, you know, from school. And the rest of the evening would be, you know, literally just like mixing music, trying to scratch, try to get. And I thought in my head I was kind of good. But, you know, at the time I was like, you know, probably sounded horrible, you know, like just any DJ starting off on turntables. But little by little, you know, I was getting better and better because I was really, really trying to be better every single day. Like, you know, I was trying to make the sounds come out better. I was trying to mix better, you know. So that's pretty much where I started. And I was 13. Yeah. So when I started, that was, was quite some time ago.
Well, we're on the topic of a long time ago. I thought it would be cool to do like a little history of DJs. So let's do it. This is
Ari's History of DJs.
The phrase DJ comes from back in the good old days of radio and vinyl, or as they were also known, discs. The radio host would jockey or change out the discs for a new song, and thus the disc jockey or DJ was born. Skipping ahead a few decades, platter parties of the 1950s featured one cool dude who would serve up track after track, often talking to the crowd between songs. Meanwhile, in Jamaica, they had invented the sound system, which can only be described as a collection of smaller speakers stacked together to create one Speakersaurus Rex. DJs over there would throw these massive street parties, and they'd even compete against each other for who had the largest speaker system. It eventually became a pretty lucrative business where they'd sell tickets and food and drinks. In the 1970s, DJ Kool Herc threw block parties in his Bronx neighborhood and developed turntablism, the art of using turntables to not only play music, but to manipulate the sound and create original tracks. In other words, he was able to make near infinite loops of single parts of the song just by mixing between the two records. Across town, Grand Wizard Theodore, I love these names, by the way, invented the scratching technique, which is, imagine that, I don't know, how do I even describe this? It's what every DJ does when they kind of like mess with the record with their finger and create that like, that was bad, but you know what I mean. The very next year, in 1974, Technics released the SL-1200 turntable, which through many evolutions remains an industry standard in DJing to this day. With the arrival of MTV in the 80s, DJing only grew in popularity, and over the next two decades, the rise of rave culture would push some of them to celebrity status. At the turn of the millennium, the MP3 player revolutionized music. Prior to its invention, DJs would have to bring crates of records to every performance, but now they could fit every single song in their pocket. What was that like living through the transition and being a DJ through the transition of analog to digital?
When I started with vinyl, there was already DJs doing this on CDs at the time. You know, and there's pros and cons with that. I was collecting CDs all day because I was playing in my CD Walkman or whatnot. You know, I thought it was cooler than cassette tapes. But as a DJ, I didn't care for the CDs. I went straight for the vinyl for multiple reasons. One, it looked cooler. You could scratch, records on a turntable versus they made devices that you can play a CD and there's like a wheel on top of it and you can scratch. But to me, you're not really scratching the CD. To me, what you're doing is you're telling a computer to do it. There's things you could do with a vinyl that you can't with a CD. I feel like you have more control with the platform you're on, you know? So it's like, you're going to race automatic or you want to race a stick.
Nowadays, David uses a software to emulate MP3s over blank vinyls.
You're still using turntables, vinyl, and a needle. The only difference is I'm using the same vinyl over and over again. And the music is not coming from the vinyl anymore because that's a tone. Where the music's coming from is my laptop that has all the MP3s. It made DJing easier, like carrying your crates and stuff. Like I don't have to carry crates anymore. Now I just bring a laptop. So, you know, if I brought like four crates of records to the event, that's all I got. And each crate, let's say, holds like 75 records. That's all you got then. You had to like pick and choose what you're bringing to the event. Where now it's like, I'm bringing everything. And if you can't fit on your computer, you could always bring a hard drive.
Or you can simply download it off the internet.
We always have the possibility of downloading the song and play it. You can never say no. You know what I mean? DJ say no because we just don't want to play the record. Like, get out of my face, you know? Like, no, I don't have internet connection right now. Like, no.
In your opinion, what makes someone a good DJ?
I heard this question many times. It's very hard to answer this because there's so many different types of DJ. So if you're talking about DJing a party, I think what makes a good DJ is knowing how to read the crowd.
And how would you read a crowd? Like, what would you do to try to get the best reaction out of each song?
I would just go fishing, is what I would call it. Like, I would literally play something and see where the crowd wants to go. That's how I read a crowd. Like, I'll play a song that I would think that the majority of the people would like and enjoy, and I would go off of their reaction on that. Because if they reacted to something and I could see their reaction and they're like, wow, I can go there. So then what I'm gonna do, my next record, I'm gonna play something that feels like that record, like that's in that zone, you know what I mean? And I'll keep it going, I'll keep that vibe going. But if I didn't get a good vibe off that record, then I would try something different, you know, like until I see something that sticks. So that's like, that there's science behind that, reading a crowd. And a good DJ would know how to read a crowd. It's like synergy, like, you know, like you wanna play something that moves the crowd. And when it does move the crowd, it moves you too.
But sometimes, for example, if you're doing radio, you don't have that crowd.
So radio is a little different because your record selection, you could play kind of like in a zone, but then you got to switch it up a little bit because let's say somebody doesn't like reggae, right?
How? Why? Who are you?
If they know you're going to switch it up at some point, they probably won't change the dial. They'll be like, yeah, you know, I'm not really feeling this genre or whatever, you know, but he knows that you're going to play like a couple songs and be out, you know? But if you stay into something too long and they don't really like that genre, they're just going to change the dial.
I was planning on doing some type of music change here, but I'm really feeling True Vibration A from APM Music. If you don't like reggae, I'm sorry, but I don't know. I just really like this one at the moment. It fits pretty well.
I actually like DJs on the radio that's not predictable. Like, I'm like, oh my god, like, remember this record? Like, things like that hits me like that. That's what I like. Stuff that I can't get if I just watch YouTube or something, or like find something on my phone. It's like, yo, give me something different. Give me a break. Give me a break from that stuff. You know what I mean? So, and there's different ways of doing that. Then there's DJs that do battle. Like, and it's all about what they call turntablism. What's the better DJ? Like, who's the better DJ in that form of DJing? So it's like, you know, one DJ scratches better, juggles better than the other DJ. That's different. Because now it's not so much about pleasing a crowd. Well, you're pleasing a crowd, but in a different way. Like the crowd, there's times where you have judges that tell you, yo, who wins a DJ battle. And then there's a lot of times where they take it street style. Like, let the crowd decide. So you're pleasing the crowd differently. You're pleasing the crowd through like tricks, you know, rather than songs that make you move.
When we return, Dave shows me his record collection, and I even tried DJing myself.
You may have heard of the podcast Juicy Scoop. Wondered what it is? Why aren't you listening? Well, I'm its host, created it, been doing it for 7 years. I'm Heather McDonald of Juicy Scoop with Heather McDonald. Now, I could tell you why you should be listening to my show, but my listeners wanted to write the ad for me, and here are some of the things they said. Not your regular Juicy podcast. Catch up on all the juicy topics from Hollywood and pop culture to true crime and beyond. Heather McDonald's Juicy Scoop always has great guests, great laughs, and great gossip. It's a comedian's take on the hottest headlines. Juicy Scoop is the pop culture news you want to hear. No BS, no filter, no filler. Raw, real, and in the moment. Throw in the hilarity of amazing comedians that you'll instantly be obsessed with, a juicy crime story, and a dash of normal life in LA moments, and you've got yourself an amazing week of Juicy Scoop. 2 episodes every week, every Tuesday and Thursday. It will never let you down.
Welcome back to Things You Don't Need to Know. If you're just joining us, today's episode is all about how to be a DJ. I'm about to sit down in front of some turntables and actually try to do this, but on my way to the turntables, we walked through Dave's record room again. And let me just tell you, this place is unbelievable. I know people say they have a lot of records, but really they only have like 50 or 100. He has about 7,000.
And don't be fooled, because there's doubles in majority of them.
Okay, correction. There's at least 7,000. I'm pretty sure there's a lot more, but I can guarantee there's 7,000. Also, just a little refresher for what this room looks like. All 4 walls have those 12-inch by 12-inch IKEA cube units. I think it's called Calyx, except these aren't the IKEA ones. These are a much better quality version. There's also even more records stacked from the top of the shelving units all the way to the ceiling. And finally, a couple metal crates in the corner, once again, full of vinyl.
I started with like a couple crates, but that was just, you know, buying some records at like some garage sales, or I would go make a trip to either Albany or down in the city, sometimes in Newburgh, to like some record shops. Any money that I was able to have from like busting tables at a restaurant over the weekend, I would have some money and buy some records. That was like a little kickstart for me to start practicing on how to use vinyl and be a DJ with turntables and whatnot. And it wasn't until like I started doing college radio. I bumped into, which I'm still very close friends with him today. He's like a brother of mine, Mr. Vince. He was working actually at a record label down in the city. So he had a lot of connections with a lot of record labels and whatnot. And that kind of like was my start. As soon as I started doing the radio with him, he put me into connections to different record labels over there. And what they do is they connect to the DJs that are on radio. So that you build a relationship with them, you know, a connection, and they give me promos. So a lot of these records you see here, the majority of them are mainly promos from the record label. So every single day at the house was like Christmas. The truck delivery would come in, and the package always looks the same. The only difference is how thick the package was. But it was always a 12-inch, wow, you know, like package. So you know it's records that are in there. So sometimes I get like maybe, and they're always in doubles, you know? So uh-huh. I might get like 4 pairs in one day. Sometimes I get like 10, you know?
The reason he wants 2 of every record is so that he can kind of mix the songs together to create almost infinite loops of certain beats. He's got 2 turntables with the same record on both of them. It allows so much more possibility for different sounds.
And this is how the record labels actually promote their music. So they go through the DJs. I'm not like their main client, you know what I mean? I'm like their promoter tool.
So having looked at all the records and picked out a few of our favorites, it was my turn to be a promoter tool. Okay, so we got 2 turntables and they're set up in battle style.
Reason why it's called battle style is
first of all, you see how the turntables, they're not, traditionally, they're supposed to be like this. I put them this way.
Both turntables are on either side of the mixer, and they've been rotated 90 degrees so that they're vertical.
Because now the tone arm and the needle is out of your way when you're mixing. So this way allows you to get busy quicker. It can do tricks.
Currently, there's a vinyl record on each of the two turntables. However, they only play a tone.
That's actually the record that you're listening to right now.
Okay.
It's a tone. It's changing as you hear it. You don't notice it, but it is. This tone has like
a code.
There's a code that's going on. So
it almost sounds like Morse code that's been stretched.
The needle takes the data from that record, sends it through the mixer and out into the computer where it's translated into an actual song.
This is specifically vinyl emulation software. They're literally vinyl. The records that I've been DJing, you know, like this.
No, it's a real record.
Yep.
This allows you to play literally anything without ever having to change the record. Hell, you could play this podcast on it if you wanted to. It also means you don't have to bring three heavy metal crates to each performance. The last thing Dave showed me was just all the little buttons on the mixer. I'm not going to get into it just because it's hard to understand when you're standing in front of it, so it would just be impossible on a podcast. But all you really need to know is there's a little slider to change between the tracks, a few buttons to start and stop the records, and you can adjust the pitch, which is crucial when mixing between two songs with different beats per minute.
When I'm cueing a song, I make it go back and forth very little so I can find where that beat is, you know, like where the bass or the bass hit or a snare, whatever sound I'm trying to start it on. Like if I move it a little bit behind, you hear nothing, but if I just right there is where the sound is. So if I just scratch that part, wait, here's when I let go. It's like I let go, but I give it a slight push. And it's like the record literally starts perfectly. It's one of those things. It's like, you know, when you're learning to drive a car and like you're in first gear with the clutch, like, you know, you got to find the sweet spot. You know what I mean? But once you find the sweet spot, this is like, you don't even think about it.
The first kind of trick he showed me was how to make a really cool sound by simply turning off the turntable.
So let's say I'm playing, right? And I go. See, there's no more power on it, you know?
That's so cool.
So yeah, one thing I like to do is when I'm doing that, right? Oh, by the way, I just spun the record back really fast. So if I like, I turn it off and then I spin it back like that.
Next, he showed me a few different scratches.
That is called a chirp. This is called a baby scratch. Because that's like the first scratch anybody will ever do. It's not even using the crossfader. Mm-hmm. Just go back and forth. But notice this sound difference. Not using a crossfader sounds like this, right? Yeah. Using one. So there's so many different sounds you could do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, just by changing the direction of the record, how fast you're changing it, and how much you're moving the crossfader, you do so many different sounds. Like I just basically turned the turntable into an instrument. But go ahead, try the baby scratch if you like. I'll put this in the middle. Baby scratch, you don't even gotta use this. Just here's the sound.
Just like that?
Yep. And if you notice it, another thing too, the record, you see how I have it all marked out? It's almost like, it's like 11 o'clock is where the sound is. That's what makes it so much easier. Like, you know where the sound is.
Yeah, so. Can you hear that?
Wow, look at that!
There we go. So then
you passed the baby scratch test.
Eh, beginner's luck, what can I say? Unfortunately, it got really advanced really quick.
I could do the echo by hand.
I wasn't able to do that.
It's actually trickier than what it looks because you gotta like go full volume, bring it all the way down. You always gotta bring it all the way down because you're bringing the record back. You don't wanna hear the backspin. Yeah. And then you gotta play it forward again, but now you gotta go with the volume not all the way up, go to 90%, bring it down, 80%, bring it down, you know, like so.
Yeah, that's incredible.
And then it's
you
like,
don't even hear any of this. Yeah, that's like the thing. You just think that it's perfect.
You play and what you want people to hear. That's when the volume's up. And then everything behind the scenes, you bring the record back or whatever, like, and you don't want them to hear that, then that's when you mute it, you know? Sometimes you want them to hear the record go back because that's part of the sound effect you're trying to make. It just depends on the sound you're trying to do. But there's literally new sounds all the time. Like, there's DJs just always coming out with creative ways of, like, scratching records.
All right, so I understand, like, a lot of the fundamentals. Now it's time to actually do it.
One thing that I think a DJ should know is how to not only just catch a beat, but can you blend one song to the other song? What makes that hard is, you know, you get the feel of the beat of the one song that's playing, but can you feel the beat of the song that you're queuing up? And how can you blend that to the song that's already playing right now with the correct speed, the correct tempo? I'm gonna give you two tracks, similar speeds, and as long as you can catch the beat, you can blend it.
So I gave it a shot.
Yeah, see, it's like you gotta get used to how much you gotta touch the record, you know what I mean? So you could bring it back again.
After a little practice finding the beat, and even more staying on tempo.
Nope. You'll get it, trust me. My mission is to make sure you do this.
I finally did it.
There, you did it. You did it.
All right.
It's on beat.
Thank you.
Now you can bring this down. There you go. You successfully mixed right there, like from one track to another track, and it's on beat.
Awesome. Wow. I knew that I could do it, but I didn't think that I would be able to.
Yeah, man.
Well, folks, there you have it. I'm not going to be in your local club anytime soon, but I sure had a lot of fun doing it.
But the fact that you actually pulled, you pulled off a couple blends, though. You mixed. I was surprised. Yeah, no, it's cool, though, man. Like, you know, it always starts with that, you know, and then after that, it's just practicing. You'll start doing this stuff, like, without even thinking about it, you know?
I've genuinely never had so much fun making an episode. I just wanted to take a few seconds to thank Dave for giving me this opportunity, showing me the ropes, and I think I'm going to go buy a turntable right now, so you help me afford this. Thanks for listening. Things You Don't Need to Know is a Hyper Object and 3 Uncanny 4 production. The show is hosted and produced by myself, Ari Kagan, with help from Harry Nelson and Shane McKean. Nuna Sharafdin is our production manager. Our executive producers are Adam McKay, Laura Mayer, and Adam Davidson. The show is mixed by Nice Manners. If you like Things You Don't Need to Know, head on over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts, and hit subscribe. Also, if you leave a review, I'll send you my mixtape. Anyway, see you next week.